Coming to you live from the visitors' room in the All-Ireland Space Programme's All-Ireland Space Prison, it's this week's apocalypse. I am your co-host and current inmate, Kevin Lennon. With me, as always, visiting, is John Ferris. John, how are you doing today?
I'm fine. The question is, how are you doing?
I'm okay. I mean, I've been wrongly convicted of a crime I didn't commit, like the A-Team, so that's kind of cool.
Or Andy Dufresne.
Or Andy Dufresne, yes, maybe like you going for a Shawshank thing here, okay.
Yeah, although tunneling out isn't really an option.
Tunneling out is not an option in a space prison.
No.
The guards are very lax, I gotta say, around here. I think they're not really that worried about people breaking out, because if you break out, where are you gonna go,
really?
So we're here in the visitors' room. It's quite pleasant in here, actually. It's sort of got like a nice sort of party atmosphere. Although, you know, it's a little sad because, you know, I have been condemned for at least, 392 months, I think my sentence is. And I only get visits once every 10 years. So we really got to make the most of this one.
Yeah, the only thing is that the visits seem to last a wee bit longer.
Yeah, they do. They give you like the better part of a day.
It's strange getting onto that Amazon ship to take me to the prison here.
Did you get flown here by Jeff Bezos himself?
Yep, man of the people, Jeff Bezos.
Indeed.
This is actually an Amazon prison.
Is it? Well, it's sponsored. There is a little sort of small sticker on the outside that does say sponsored by Amazon. I don't know if that was a misprint by the All-Ireland Space Program, or, you know, they're doing some dodgy dealings, or it's some knockoff company. Sure, it was definitely Jeff Bezos. It might have been just some other weird bald guy. The CEO of Amazon.
Well, I managed to stow some contraband in.
Oh my gosh! What did you bring me? Like a phone? Did you bring me like a chisel? Did you bring me like I don't know, like some kind of hacking tool or something like that?
Even better, little portable DVD player and three DVDs.
You brought me your crappy battery-powered portable DVD player and some DVDs.
But the DVDs are about space prisons.
Oh. Uh-huh. I see what you're getting at now. Okay. Right, well, let
what
me have a
wee
look
at these. What
would you have
done with a cell phone out here?
I don't know. We're probably not close enough to a cell tower, are we, to get even reception? And, yeah, good point. I could have done some sci-fi bullshit and boosted the signal with, like, tinfoil and chewing gum wrappers. But
I've turned this cell phone into a bomb.
Cool. Yay, that seems bad in space. in a pressurized container in a vacuum, but okay. So let's see what you've got here. Okay, so we've got from 2018, we have Claire Denis' High Life.
Yeah.
Ooh. From the not too distant past. from the slightly more distant past, we have James Mather and Steve St. Leger's Lockout from 2012. Ooh.
Yep.
And then from the far-flung past, or depending on where you're at, and perhaps the far-flung future of the year 2000.
Ooh.
What a big number. We have Jeff Murphy's Fortress 2.
Yeah.
The second Fortress. I hope you watched
Fortress 1's anything to go by. Yep. This should be a great movie.
Yeah, this should be extremely enjoyable and tell us a lot about imprisonment.
Mm-hmm.
And how to extract me from imprisonment. Cool. Well, let's sit down and watch these movies. All right, cool. Well, they're calling time on recreation here, so we're not allowed to watch any more films, but luckily we got them all out of the way just in time. So, John, why do we have our discussion, our little discussion group? So I'm going to pretend to do some arts and crafts here, because that's what they make you do in the space prison. I'm going to make, I don't know, something sci-fi. What would be a cool sci-fi thing for me to make?
Ooh, lasers?
Okay, I'll make a... Ooh. Yeah, I'll make a laser out of paper mache and masking tape. Okay. Well, while I'm doing that, John, what did you think of High Life, directed by Claire Denis?
High Life. High Life's a very beautiful looking movie at times, but I have issues with the story Ooh. And the characters and the kind of like internal logic in this movie is really broken. And I'm just going to like, I kind of watched a few interviews and things with mainly with Claire Denis and Robert Pattinson, who is actually really excellent. He's probably the best mm-hmm. thing in this movie. His performance is great.
It's a good thing that he's the central character.
Yeah, anyway. Yeah, definitely. But I watched a few interviews, and some of them it's just normal kind of guff, nothing kind of new, nothing really major mm-hmm. to speak about, but still interesting if you like that kind of stuff. But at one point, and I can't remember who it was an interview with, she mentioned that she wanted the feel of this kind of craft to be different from the usual clean sci-fi stuff. And I just went, what?
I went, really?
2018? I kind of, at this point, I almost think that it's more of a cliche to have the grittier kind of style of spacecraft made popular mm-hmm. by movies like Alien and, yeah. you know, and shows like Firefly and things like that, you know. Mm. It made me kind of think, because it's a genre movie in a sense that, you know, it's space travel and sci-fi, yeah. Do the makers of this, like, because she wrote this as well, do they have much involvement with this genre? Because what she said seemed really kind of like opposing to what I think of as kind of popular trends in the sci-fi community yeah. and sci-fi like movies in general. So I don't know. Wee things like that kind of have like I'd already had formed my opinions off the movie, but wee things like that kind of peppered it with like doubts of like, I don't think you've had much dealings with this genre.
Yeah, maybe like not like too much of a sci-fi head doing yeah. a sci-fi movie, but I mean that can work. I mean like Stanley Kubrick, when you look at him, yeah. he's jack of all trades, and he did so many different styles of things, and almost like, I mean, he did 2001: A Space Odyssey. If you want to talk about clean sci-fi,
yeah. You know. I kind of, to me, it almost feels like that's the only sci-fi movie she's watched. And went, yeah. yep, well, that's sci-fi for you.
Right, so you're saying that she didn't want it to be clean sci-fi, or did want it to be clean sci-fi?
Like, didn't she wanted like a kind of grittier feeling?
Which it's not like, that that's not gritty what I at all. Yeah. It looked like, I thought you were going to say she really wanted to go for a clean sci-fi aesthetic, because that's
kind of what it
that's
is.
That's what it has. Like, yeah. I mean, it's got those like straight lines and clean surfaces and stuff. There's sometimes there are stains here and there, but they usually have just been applied to a wall with someone's face.
Yeah, the outside shots always reminds me of like something from like Red Dwarf or something.
Yeah, I find that as well, but I find that a little bit endearing.
Yeah.
I actually quite liked the look of the special effects, and the zero-G stuff was kind of just the right side of cartoonish for me. The way things moved and the way things floated and stuff, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Because I did actually, I will ultimately say that I kind of did like this movie for the most part.
Okay.
I think I have a thing for like a nice, quiet, odd sci-fi movie, like something like that has like weird explosive moments of violence, but is mostly meditative and strange.
Yeah.
Like something like the perfect example of that would maybe be a film called Silent Running.
Oh, yes.
With Bruce Dern in it, about a guy who has like the last trees in the universe, and he decides he doesn't want to have to burn them because I think it's like Mission Control tell them, here, right, we're abandoning this keep a forest in space thing. You just can all come home. Yeah. And he is so into keeping them alive, and he thinks it's just a disgrace. So he like goes rogue and goes off into space with this forest dome. Mm-hmm. And it's just this, it's one of those films that has a lot of long shots and like extremely long moments of quiet.
Yeah.
Punctuated by panic, but then it like always goes back. So I kind of like that about this, that it did that a fair bit.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there was definitely good moments in this movie, and as I said, the cinematography is great at times.
Yeah.
And like the, as I say, Robert Pattinson's performance and Andre 3000's performance, I enjoyed
as well.
Yeah,
he's great.
Yeah.
It took me a wee minute to realize it was him.
Yeah, same here. I didn't really realize till after the fact. I was like, oh my God, yeah.
Yeah, no, because my fiance pointed it out while she was like looking at him and she was just like, is that Andre 3000? And I looked at him and I was like, no. And as soon as he opened his mouth and spoke, I was like, yes, it is him.
It is.
So I'm not used to seeing him with, like, I don't know, with like, he's got like, maybe it's because he's way older than the last time I would have seen him.
Yeah. And maybe. He's like, he's rocking a beard and like Andre 3000 normally kind of dresses quite flamboyantly. So it's like, he's just in like his orange jumpsuit with the beard and he was pretty good in this. But I wasn't really taken with Mia Goth's character.
No, she was a little bit cloying and I didn't find her very interesting at all.
But I just found, I found there was no frame of reference to, because they were trying at some point to do like the whole, you know, this kind of environment, like shipping people in this prison away from Earth, and they've lost all concept of time and stuff like this.
Yeah.
And they're almost like becoming bestial or whatever, you know. Well, some of them. But I didn't have any frame of reference who these people were, what they were like before they ended up in here, you know. So it was hard to kind of really get a grasp of like how they changed. You know, there was no real frame of reference at all for any of them.
You get a few weird snippets of some kids who have like jumped a train or something.
Yeah.
But outside of that, it's like you don't really get any insight into their characters, really.
No.
From the kind of people who they were before. They'll sometimes talk about like, they'll sometimes mention stuff that happened to them, like Robert Pattinson's character sort of tangentially talks about how he got landed there in the space prison.
Yeah.
But it's not really explicit, and you don't get a good sense of the kind of people that they are, really. I think he does a good job of being like, they do a good job of being like, here's what he's like now.
Yeah.
And people talk about him, like Juliette Binoche's character, Dibs, who's like the weird fertility doctor. who's, and I put the emphasis on weird there. She's a weird fertility doctor.
Yeah.
She's very critical of him because he won't engage with her crazy experiments.
And the fuck box.
Yeah, and the fuck box, which is what they call it, which is just weird. And I don't really understand it 100%.
No.
But I don't mind that. I don't mind that it's weird thing that's never really explained. You get some weird stuff with it where it's like leaking fluid.
Yeah.
And stuff for some reason. And that's very strange. And that's not entirely clear.
Which is another problem. Like, who does all the maintenance? And like, it basically, like, it shows you that one person can completely maintain and fly this spacecraft or, I don't know, keep it on its trajectory. I don't think there's any real control. It seems to just be on autopilot or something. But despite that, like, things are going to go wrong in a ship.
Yeah, because it does that in media res thing of, like, it starts sort of at the halfway point in a way where he is alone with a baby. And you're like, why is he alone with a baby?
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, he seems to be able to run the ship alone.
Yeah.
Easy enough, for the most part.
And I mean, I think, like, you know, there's a lot of, like, obviously trying to challenge taboos and things like that. Or addressing them, at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
But I kind of think it does a bad job of, like, showing what it would be like for just a father and daughter to be in space alone for let's say what age is she, like 16, 17?
She looks to be maybe like at least she's about 15 maybe by the time she is talking and grown up and stuff. Now they don't seem to do anything to make Robert Pattinson look older.
No.
At all. He looks the same throughout the entire film, but I guess it's supposed to be like from the earliest we see him on the ship to the latest we see him on the ship, it's probably supposed to be about 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And he doesn't age a goddamn day. He just looks the same for the whole thing. I was able to sort of get over that, but it was niggling at me every now and then.
I think that he might have a few grey hairs or something, but it's very downplayed.
His salt and pepper, his stubble a little, perhaps, but that's about it. But I don't really have much of a problem with that, because usually I kind of like find it a little jarring when they try to artificially age people up and it always looks bad.
It doesn't really matter. It did for like a moment where it is him with that the older daughter, let's say the 15-year-old daughter, and I was like kind of going, who's this now? How did she get on the ship? And then I was like, no, that I get it now.
Yeah,
it took me a few seconds for my brain to change gears and go, no, this isn't the past anymore.
Yeah, because they don't have that visual cue of he got older.
Yeah.
You're like, wait, is this someone who was on the ship and I just didn't notice that they were an already established character? But no, it's like this is the baby grown up, but it's a bit confusing. But yeah, this film, like, it's trying to say a lot.
Yeah.
About people, I guess, and... You know, I don't know. I will say I really did enjoy most of the aesthetic of this film.
Yeah.
Because it was quiet and a little strange. And it did, even though, like you were saying about like the dirty sci-fi, I felt like it really had that clean sci-fi look for the most part.
Like, to me,
the only thing dirty about it was that they had a room in the middle of the ship that had plants and soil in it, and that didn't feel dirty. That was seemed quite pleasant.
Yeah, maybe I picked her up wrong, or to know she's speaking a second language, to know she is French, to know maybe it was something like lost in translation. She didn't actually mean what I took from it, but. It was just kind of strange. Like, I do find this to be a very clean ship. It does kind of would have more in common with 2001 than it would with Alien or anything like that. And I mean, actually, I kept thinking of that, like that whole starting sequence in Alien and how much better it did it, like introducing these characters and making it feel like, you know, that there's a term that it kind of more or less started of, like, these truckers in space, where you know, space travel isn't that like crazy in this time.
It's not glamorous or out there.
It's just a job.
It's just a functional thing in Alien. They're just like, they are towing a big thing full of ore back to Earth, basically, or to wherever it's going to get processed, and it's taking them like over a year to do that.
Yeah.
Now this has the same sort of idea of a long haul journey, but it's not like in Alien. They're supposed to spend it in suspended animation, whereas in this, it's like a weird experiment.
It's a weird experiment, and also like a death sentence.
Yeah, it's like they were all sentenced to death maybe already.
Yeah,
for crimes that maybe don't justify being sentenced to death. I don't know. It's never really made that clear, but it's sort of like, oh, you get to live a bit longer and get flung into a black hole. Oh, cool.
Awesome.
Yeah. But I did kind of enjoy those things about it. The weird black hole stuff I quite liked.
Yeah, no, I like those moments as well. Like the main gripes I had with it were the characterizations and the kind of just the I couldn't really get my head around like, you know, the logic of what was being done, of like putting these people, like putting prisoners on a ship and like just like firing it out. But again, it's maybe one of those ones you just don't think about. It almost seems like it was just to serve the higher concept, which is kind of you know, it's shit that sometimes I just niggles at me. Like it annoys me if that has to be done just to make your arty movie. It's like you know what, go fuck yourself. You can still make it logical.
But I guess, you need to at least have an internal logic.
Yeah. And like the worst scene in this movie is that random exposition scene on the train. It's a random, stupid scene. And it's really badly acted as well.
Didn't need to be in there. I think it feels like they deliberately wanted it to look like one of those Channel 4 or like BBC like 1970s education, we're going to show this to school kids thing, or just like this girl interviewing this professor on a train.
Yeah. And they're never seen again.
And that was it. I thought maybe that was going to be a coda that would come back, and then we would get like a bit more information next time, and it would illuminate something.
It felt so clunky and so out of place. Like it was literally an exposition scene. It was just this character explaining the space prison, and that was it, and kind of explaining a bit about it's experimental or something, and that. And I found the dog ship to be very strange as well.
That was extraneous in the extreme. I was just like, why? Once that bit ended, I was like, that was completely unnecessary.
Yeah. And again, that is just to serve the higher art, let's say. Because it showed you like all the kind of stronger dogs, let's say, like, you know, have killed the weaker ones. And it was just like moments like that kind of detracted from the movie more than I thought. You know, it was maybe getting a bit too far up its own hole to use a parlance of
Jesus. Well, okay, I will agree. I think there is maybe a 10 to 15 minute shorter cut of this movie that is better, that excludes those parts. But I will say that I actually still really, really enjoyed this film. I like the atmosphere. There was something about the aesthetic that I did really like, and I liked all of the way they handled the zero G stuff.
Yeah.
I just liked, because it was so basic in a way.
Yeah.
Of just like things floating in stillness in space, and this in a way that's maybe unrealistic, but I still find like really nice.
Yeah.
And like there's a part where he's dumping bodies out airlocks and they're just dropping, and I just find something really like satisfying about him just like dropping all these bodies into, just dumping them out this fucking hole, basically, like away you go. Like, I don't know, I really liked it. But again, there was some stuff that maybe I don't need explained, but maybe needed more justified. Okay, so my attempted laser has turned into a sort of a paper mache duck. John, do you want to take this home with you?
Ooh,
there you
go.
Yeah. Ooh. There you go.
Space all souvenirs.
Right. I did. Yeah. I mean, all the materials came from Earth, but you know, it's probably slightly radioactive.
Space souvenir.
Yes, it's got cosmic rays imbued in it, because they definitely did not shield this place. You know, once again, much like the All-Ireland Space Station, it seems to have some Campbell's soup cans just bolted to the outside, flat.
It'll harden you.
Yeah. Will it? What doesn't kill me will make me stronger, except if it's radiation, because that will only make me extremely weak and fragile. But talking about things that are weak, what did you think of James Mather and Stephen St. Leger's Lockout from 2012? Good lord.
Oh, it's desperate. It is. Mm-hmm. It's horrendous. Mm-hmm. It's hard to even get to the end of this movie. It's that bad. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, I mean, something I know you'll know a good bit about is that it's basically ripping off John Carpenter's work quite a lot.
John Carpenter.
Yes. Two specific films that John Carpenter made that this film shamelessly rips off constantly throughout its runtime. Mm-hmm. I remember. Okay, let's go back to the heady days of 2012, when we were wee nippers. And when I say wee nippers, we were like, I don't know, like 30 nearly. But anyway, back in 2012. So I remember seeing a trailer for this with a friend of ours. And just being like, we both were just like, that looks like Escape from New York in space. I'll watch that. Ha ha ha. That's probably going to be awful, but maybe it'll be fun.
Wrong you were.
Yeah, well, I was wrong about the second part, but I was right about the first part in buckets, because John Carpenter probably saw the trailer for that and was like, that looks like my movie in space. And the thing is, like, I had read a lot beforehand, because I had heard about this all before and thought it was very funny, because I saw this film and then I heard, John Carpenter was basically like, you've just ripped me off.
Yeah.
You owe me royalties for writing, using my writing and my mate's writing, because he co-wrote it with a friend of his.
Yeah.
So there's a screenwriter on Escape from New York as well. So what happened was, and like, it's not something that I would usually be annoyed at someone about, because I kind of like it when someone does like a homage to a film that they love.
Yeah.
You know, like I think I vaguely mentioned it before, but there's a film called Carnosaur 2, which is the sequel to a film called Carnosaur that I've never seen. But I've seen Carnosaur 2, and Carnosaur 2 is a huge, it's basically a remake of Aliens.
Yeah.
But with crappy polystyrene dinosaurs instead. It has all the same characters and plot points, but if Aliens had no budget and bad actors and a terrible director. And it's because of that, it's this beautiful love letter to Aliens that you can sit and enjoy and laugh and be like, this is just like Aliens in every single way. And it's funny that it is. The problem with this film is that Luc Besson is a lying hack because he tried to crack, and this comes up right at the start of the film. It says, based on an original idea by Luc Besson, which is just a lie. That's lying.
Yep.
Luc Besson, you're a liar. Because it's not an original idea. It's Escape from New York from 1981.
And I mean, it's not even, you know, it's not even that great of an idea that like you'd bum and blow about it.
No, it's not like, oh, this was my idea. And it's like, like, I love Escape from New York. I think Escape from New York is a great film. The concept of it is, it's a good sort of structure.
Yeah.
For you to put on your movie of, oh, the entirety of New York has been turned into a prison, and this guy has to go in and rescue the president. Yeah. Now, in Escape from L.A., he has to go in and rescue the president's daughter.
Yeah.
Where LA has been made into a prison, so there's stuff from both of those films in here, which is how you know it wasn't just an accident.
And Escape from LA is generally regarded to be fairly terrible as well.
It's bad, but I love watching it.
Yeah, because, I was going to say, like, I can watch it in that kind of like piss take kind of attitude. You know, it's fun.
Yeah,
at the very least.
It's the same reason I can watch Carnosaur 2 and enjoy it. I can watch Escape from LA and enjoy it, because Escape from LA is basically a remake of Escape from New York with a smaller budget and bad acting and awful special effects.
But there's also a thing with Escape from New York and Escape from LA. The protagonist, played wonderfully by Kurt Russell, is likable. Even though he's kind of a bit of a dick, he's likable because Kurt Russell has just so much charisma. You know,
he
just embodies this character, and he's great. Whereas I find the main character, and like, don't get me wrong, Guy Pearce is a very, very good actor, but he cannot pull off the same thing that Kurt Russell did.
No.
Like, this is a guy that he constantly talks in quips. He doesn't have a proper conversation with anyone.
Yeah.
And he's just a ball bag.
You're right, John, that is a really good description of him. He's just a ball bag. He's just an annoying ball bag. Unlike Snake Plissken from Escape from New York, it's just like, he's fun to watch because he's like, he's fed up and he's grumpy, and he's like Snake Plissken isn't trying to be clever or funny ever. Snake Plissken sits there angrily and smokes, and like, much like they have this guy constantly smoking. I mean, the ways in which they rip off Escape from New York are so myriad, I feel like it's no point in even addressing them. But he sits there, he smokes, he refuses to let them use his real first name, just like the guy in this. The way they get to the station is even really similar. He goes on board, and like, there's a guy that he knows who's imprisoned there just the same way. It goes on and on and on and on and on with the reasons why it's the same, and the reasons why it fails are all the same things, where it's like they're ripping it off and they're doing it poorly. And thing is, if they had stood up in court and said, John, we made a homage to your movie because we love your movie, I would be fine with that. I'd be like, yes, that's fine. But they didn't. They just knuckled down and insisted, no, this is my movie. And to the point where after they were, what happened was John Carpenter, like going like way overboard, was like, I want 2.4 million, right? So they were like, the judge in the court was like, no, but it's definitely a ripoff. It's a huge landmark case, actually, because this hadn't really happened before. Yeah. Someone going, you've ripped off this person's movie.
Yeah.
So he was like, the damages weren't that bad for a movie studio. I mean, it was 50 grand had to go to Studio Canal, who owned the rights to Escape from New York, mm-hmm. 20 grand to John Carpenter, and 10 grand to his mate, who he wrote the screenplay with.
Yeah.
They refused to pay. They went back to appeals court. They appealed it. And at the end of the appeal, the appeals judge multiplied all the numbers by 5 and said, right, pay that instead. So, you know, he ended up getting, like, John Carpenter ended up with, like, £500,000, or oh, half yeah. a million euros, rather, out of this.
Yeah, fuck those guys.
Yeah. Because they just rip off stuff. Like, it's not a very well-made film. It's okay, it's competent enough. I think the special effects in it are kind of crappy, but
the bit,
whatever.
The bit on the bike. He's the
beginning.
The future bike, and oh god, it looks so bad.
Yeah, I was like, this is 2012, right? Oh, no.
And that's
right,
that's so, kind of yeah. when you realize what you're in for, and you're like, oh shit.
yeah, and then you just sort of sit there and wait, and it's just, the dialogue is atrocious consistently.
So from start to finish, the fights as well, I find to be very like I mean, this is around the time that the Jason Bourne movies kind of
Aye.
Made the choppy, like overly edited fights mm-hmm. popular, and this utilizes that at certain points, and it's horrible. It's terrible.
I'd say they're way less competently than Paul
yeah.
Greengrass.
yeah. I mean, it worked for Bourne, but
yeah,
maybe the first one, even like the even the sequels were kind of like, okay, like this is played out. I prefer to actually see my action and see what's happening. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it was better than Time Cop's cuts, but that's almost an insult now that I've just brought up Time Cop, and I mean it in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's the thing. Like, even if John Carpenter had never made Escape from New York and Escape from LA, and this movie just came out and it was this original concept and blah blah blah, it's still a crappy movie. It's still very badly.
Yeah, even if it wasn't a ripoff, it would still be boring and poorly written and badly edited. I mean, I cannot stress enough how shit the dialogue is. It is, and I'm sorry for getting angry and say, but it is really bad dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
It's so bad. It's insultingly bad. And all of his quips are excruciating. Like, I felt my skin crawling, and I felt for Guy Pearce. Like, there's so many good actors in this.
Yeah.
Like, Peter Stormare is
That's
in
right,
it.
That's right, I forgot
him.
He was in it, because my wife kept, like, going, what is Peter Stormare doing in this movie?
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, but, I mean, he has been in a bunch of crap.
Yeah,
but
I mean,
he's usually
went for the paycheck as much as anyone.
Yeah, I mean, but he's usually, when he's in things, he's usually watchable. In this, he's not even. Like, I mean, you even forgot he was in it.
Yeah, I kind of, my brain just, like, blanked the fact that he was in it.
Yeah, because, like, our two lead sort of villains, I've seen them in other things, and they're great.
Yeah.
They're two, well, one of them, I think, is an Irish guy. I don't know if he's actually Scottish, the wiry guy.
Yeah. The kind of crazy one.
They're supposed to be Scottish brothers. One of them is Scottish, I think, and the other guy's Irish, but he's playing Scottish. He does all right. His accent slips here and there.
Yeah.
But he's mostly great. In fact, he's probably the best thing in the film.
Yeah.
He's the most interesting thing in the film, but he's overwritten in a way to be this sort of unhinged, unpredictable guy. He plays it well, but it's still just like, you still watch it going...
He's actually English. He was...
Is he English?
Lancashire. Sorry.
All right. See, I just assumed because he was in Preacher, the TV show, which was not a great show, but he was brilliant in it, and he's playing an Irish vampire in that, and his accent, as far as I was concerned, in that was flawless.
Oh, cool.
So I just assumed he was an Irish guy. There you go.
I had this moment in this movie where, before I realized they were brothers in the fiction,
yeah.
It just seemed to me that all the convicts were Scottish, and it's like, what the hell? Is this like some kind of weird racist message they're trying to put out?
Yeah.
That all convicts are Scottish, and then once the reveal happens, like, okay, yeah, I get
yeah.
it
now. No, I saw that one coming. I saw that one coming about 5 seconds before he said it.
I wasn't really... I think,
was like, it's his brother.
I think my brain was just trying to switch off through the whole thing.
Yeah.
I had to, like, keep, you know, kind of trying to shock it into staying awake.
You made a good decision there, I think. Yeah, because this film's terrible. It ends so badly and so stupidly. And you want to talk about logic. We were talking about logic in High Life. I mean, High Life is a goddamn masterpiece, especially compared to this. Like,
yes.
High Life is a masterpiece of logical consistency, even though High Life had some serious logical inconsistencies.
Yeah, I mean,
this film.
Yeah, you know, even the fact that the main antagonist that like somehow manages to take control of the prison
yeah.
in an instant. Like, no one questions him. How many? There's thousands of these convicts, and it's just just like that.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know what? We've done this before, where you could literally pick any scene or any part of this movie, and there would be no logic in it.
Yeah,
I think the biggest thing to take away is they, you know, it's ugly looking,
mm-hmm.
kind of well, badly acted because the actors really didn't have much to go.
Yeah, there are people who are going for it, and you feel like Guy Pearce is leaning into it in a way, but what he's leaning into isn't great.
No.
You know, he's trying to be this clever, quippy, like, cool action hero guy, and it feels like someone pretending to be a clever, quippy, cool action hero guy.
Yeah.
Like, his smirk is just sort of annoying after a while, and the things he says just make you want to punch him in his face. Like, I think, like, the best stuff is around the Scottish criminals.
Yeah.
And, unfortunately, like, their dialogue has been written by the same people who wrote the rest of the dialogue, so they're suffering from that. President's daughter is basically no one. She's nothing. She's barely a character at all.
Yeah.
And, like, everyone's barely a character. The president's not a character. The president's just a president.
I was actually about to say, I don't even think he properly appears, but he does. Yeah,
he does. But again, much like Peter Stormare, you forgot about him.
Yeah,
because he was so forgettable.
I think my brain's already like deleting this movie as we're talking.
Yeah, it's as you say things, they're just spilling out of your head, never to come back.
If you come back to me in a week and go, "Oh, do you remember Lockout?" I'll be like, "No, I've never seen that movie in my life."
What's Lockout? Oh, you should watch it. Why don't you go watch it now? It's really good. Yeah. So no, I mean, there's just huge problems with physics and everything in this movie, and like they just happen to crash into the International Space Station. Just space is huge. The orbiting around the Earth, it's huge. And the idea that you would accidentally just crash into the one thing that is like really big thing that's orbiting around there is just ridiculous. Also, apparently the atmosphere of the Earth is like 20 feet deep.
Yeah.
So that's a problem. Now, that's not the biggest problem with the film, but that was the last problem with the film that I had. So it just stuck in my head. I feel like it's extremely relevant to their escape. So I feel like it's relevant to this. And it's just not practical.
No.
It just doesn't make any sense. It's nothing to that at all.
Yeah, this is a bad movie. I couldn't recommend this to anyone. It's not even... You know, we might get to it here next... not even one of those movies that you can kind of get a bit of fun out of how ridiculous and stupid it is. This one doesn't really even have that.
No, it doesn't. And you're showing your hand now, so I feel like we should get going and move on to something we can all enjoy. Okay, well, it's yard time now, and we're down. I don't know why they've let you out into the yard with me. You're only supposed to be visiting me in space prison. But here we are in our space suits walking around outside in the yard. Which, you know, the magnets in our boots are holding us down really well here, and like we could go do some jump rope, or there's like a weight set over there, but the weight set doesn't really do anything because we're in space and it's weightless.
Yeah.
But you can move your arms up and down, and you can feel real strong.
Yeah, you can look really strong.
Yeah, you can pick these up, and you can pick these up and put them... Look, see, you can pick them up and put them down. This thing's friggin' huge, and up you are, yeah. Well, I'm a briefcase, but I am actually quite literally wasting away to nothing. I feel like my muscles are atrophying as we speak. So before I turn into a horrible space bone man, let's have a little chat and figure out what we can learn from Jeff Murphy's Fortress 2 from the year 2000, John.
Ooh.
2000. Ah, that's a sci-fi year if ever I heard one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was 21 years ago.
It was 21 fucking years ago. We were 16. Yay.
Wow. Oh, dear.
What did you think about the great Fortress 2, John? Tell me all about it.
I love Fortress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there you go. I love Fortress 1.
All right, cool. I really like Fortress 1 as well. It has the most hilariously short labor in cinema history.
Yeah. Yeah, you can't really talk about Fortress 2 without talking about Fortress 1.
Because you'll go mad.
Because
if you just talk about Fortress 2.
Because it's got the number right at the end there. Because it's mainly... It's one of these like real committee-made... movies where like someone has come in, and I might be able to name this person actually. Someone come in and went, right, we should make another Fortress. This is like 8 years after the first Fortress was made.
Uh-huh.
How can we make it even better? Like, how do we raise the stakes in it? Let's put it in space.
Yeah.
Because, and I'm saying this because if you look up the writers of this, there is a producer.
Yes.
He only has three writing credits to his name, and they're Fortress 2, The Veteran, and Cyborg Soldier.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the producer, John Flock, I think, was the one who came up with this idea.
You think he's responsible for, let's just put it in space.
Just put it in space. That's how you ramp up anything, yeah.
Yeah.
But it loses so much of like what made Fortress special. Like Fortress 1 tries to do so much, and it's... By no means a perfect movie or anything, but it is very enjoyable and has a lot going for it.
The concept of someone describing the first Fortress movie as a perfect movie almost short-circuits my brain. But I thoroughly enjoy Fortress.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... I think in large part, the same way when we were talking about the Mortal Kombat movie, there is a huge amount of... let's say cachet that is brought with someone like Christopher Lambert, where you're like, you already know, usually, like, we already know going in, I like Christopher Lambert, I like his style, I like his laugh, I like the way he sort of smirks and stuff like that. When we were watching Beowulf, it was really disappointing because he didn't do any of that.
Yeah,
there's a bit of it here.
He did the laugh, which is important.
He does laugh at one point, which he did not seem to do during Beowulf, which made Beowulf interminably long and awful. Whereas this movie, he does have a bit of a sense of humor, his character. Yeah. Exactly. John, you've got that nailed now. That's brilliant. But yeah, this movie's just... It felt... Now, talking about things that are in terminal, it did feel extremely long for me. It felt extremely cheap. I recognized a fair few people in it, but not necessarily from anything good.
No.
Pam Grier is in this, and I don't know why she's in it.
Yeah,
except that they just could get Pam Grier, because her character does nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing at all. She may as well not be there.
She gets punched, and apparently the actress Liz May Bryce... knocked her out cold when she did that.
Seriously, she actually knocked out Pam Grier. That's terrible.
To be honest, anything I say about this movie, take with a grain of salt, because trying to look up stuff about this movie, like the behind the scenes and all that, is virtually impossible. You just get a lot of Team Fortress 2 comes up.
Yeah, I find that as well. Whenever I was like even trying to find the film to watch it,
yeah,
I was getting all these Team Fortress things. Like, I don't want anything to do with Team Fortress.
Yeah, I wrote Christopher Lambert.
I want Christopher Lambert. Yeah, I mean, it was an easy thing to get over, but like, as far as like finding actual information about it,
yeah,
it is, yeah, it's few and far between.
So like, I mean, I'm reading that Pam Grier was knocked out cold from the IMDb. I don't know if that's true. But my favourite bit of trivia, and I've told you this already, but is that apparently the catering for the movie comprised entirely of soup.
That's incredible. That's one of the main reasons I actually wanted to watch this film, is that you told me that and I nearly died. Christopher Lambert was part of a, was he a cult?
It says here, a radical nutritional cult. But I love that he's subjected the rest of the cast and the crew to this. So like everyone had to just eat soup.
Man, that's just wild. Oh, Chris.
Oh, dear. Apparently that's in a 2012 Sight and Sound interview, which I didn't get a chance to really kind of dig into and try and find, but I might do that after this, actually, just to confirm it and just to read that interview, because I want to know what else went on with this.
I believe in it hard enough now that I've just, it's, for me, it's true.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. I no matter, it's that kind of, what do you call it? Mental dissonance? No, it's not.
Ludonarrative Ludo? What?
No, basically, I'll not believe you even if you show me that it's not true.
Because
it'll just not work with my brain.
It's already in there and it's lodged in, and now it's fact. Yeah, there's not a lot of supplementary material for this movie to explore.
No.
There is a DVD of it, which I was not willing to buy. Because, damn, I love the cover of It's Terrible. It's just his big face. He's on the cover twice. Yeah. It's his big face, and then he's also standing there on the cover, which is fun.
Yeah.
So they do some stuff with this movie where they try to sort of echo the first film in a way. But
you say echo, I say ape.
Ape, okay. Ape. We'll go with ape.
Or rip off.
Yeah.
This is like, very much a lockout scenario, only they're ripping off the better predecessor.
It's almost an Escape from LA scenario, really. Yeah, which is the same thing, really. Yeah. Yeah, it's basically hitting sort of all the same sort of plot beats in a way. Like, I mean, you've got, obviously, he comes into the prison, people are adversarial towards him. He sort of makes friends with violence.
I mean, the thing is, though, with it, just when you're saying with the friends, you know, in the first one, they do a good enough job where, you know, they characterize those guys well enough. I mean, you've got Abraham, the kind of butler guy to the guy running the prison, and like he's very kind of standoffish almost with Christopher Lambert's character, and this is all in the first one, but in this they don't really do any work with the friends, with these like buddies that he has. A couple of them are people that he already knew who just happened to get arrested around the same time.
Yeah, you got pre-packaged prison buddies, basically, so he doesn't have to go and earn prison respect.
Yeah, and it's really cheap, and it's really like, it's just bad writing.
I also noticed a similarity between this and Lockout, in that they have a character who has, because of one thing or another, has become essentially like cartoonishly mentally deficient. I mean, they did this in Lockout as well, in a way that was just annoying and rubbish, and it's annoying and rubbish in this as well. Where he's somehow the key, the things he's saying are relevant, and it's the kind of the same way that they try to use people with Asperger's in Hollywood to pretend like these people are super intelligent computer people, because we watched Rain Man and we decided that just was an easy get out. Absolute nonsense.
Yeah.
So that's basically how that Stanley is the character in this.
Yeah.
And it's just annoying and tedious when he's on screen. It's like one of those really bad, crappy Channel 5 sci-fi shows. Where you're watching it and someone's trying to act like weird and it's just embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what was that one? There was one called Lex with like two X's. or something.
Yes, yes, I vaguely remember that.
It was so awful. But that's what this film mostly reminded. The aesthetic of this film reminded me of that. Like the bad special effects and the way things would just happen and the terrible acting and awful dialogue. And, oh, I mean, there were points in this movie where I was laughing and being like, okay, this is kind of fun.
Yeah.
But they were few and far between. And it just felt like most of the time I was like, what?
I mean, most of the time it is just Fortress One did this better. Fortress One had this entire like sequence in it, and you're just doing it, but doing it really badly. And I mean, even the antagonist, the guy running the prison it's very well done. He's characterized quite well, and you know his motivations, and he's kind of creepy, and you find out all this like weird shit about him. Yeah. This guy, the warden in this is just kind of boring.
He's boring and he's generic, and he's actually a Bond villain.
Yeah.
His motivations are Bond villain motivations. Like, in the first one, it was weirdly personal.
Yeah.
Where he was, like, becoming obsessed with Brennick's wife.
Yeah.
Who was, like, pregnant and was in the prison, and he had her living with him and stuff, and he was this weird, like, clone guy or something in the first one that had been brought up by the company, and, like, there was something weirdly creepy and actually really fascinating about that.
Yeah.
And that interaction, whereas in this, it's like, I'm building a space laser! I'm building a space laser, and Pam Grier doesn't like that I'm building a space laser.
And it also happens to be like, oh, if you destroy this space prison, you've basically destroyed this big company, because this is their this is their source of power. And I was like, how?
Like, it's their source of, I think they meant power literally, like electricity.
But again, how?
Solar,
maybe, I don't know. Again, we probably shouldn't try and look too deeply I mean, because you've got the hole as well that he gets put in, which I kind of like the idea of. You know,
conceptually, I thought that was brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah, conceptually, that's great, because he's being exposed to UV rays and stuff like that, but he's also being exposed to the coldness of space at the same time.
Yeah.
And I really liked that. But it went on and on and on and on and on. And then they had voiceover narration, basically, of like people talking somewhere else about it. About like, oh, he's lasted longer than expected.
Of course, he's lasted longer than expected.
He's the protagonist, so he's too cool to die, basically, is what they're saying over the footage of him going, and frost on his face and stuff. Ugh.
Yeah. And I mean, to me, that was just like them trying to think of a different way to, because you had the mind wipe thing in the first one, which he's in for like days, and they're like, there's a reason he gets taken out of it, and he's not superhuman in that one, because it's like the antagonist literally says to his wife, like, another day and his brain will be mush, which it kind of is anyway.
Yeah, and it's like, it's also a ripoff of The Bridge Over the River Kwai, because in there's the box.
Oh, yeah.
You get put in, and you have to stay in this tin box in the sun, and it basically cooks you while you're in there. They're basically doing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, with a bit of a twist on it, which
I'm not talking about real films here.
No. We're talking about Fortress and Fortress 2. Yeah. So, the whole way through this, I was thinking, and now you did the wise thing. You did watch Fortress 1 beforehand. I have seen Fortress 1 a few times, so I knew where I was at plot-wise. But the whole time I was watching this, I was like, I really wish I was watching Fortress 1 instead. Because it's better. It's not necessarily like high art cinema, but it's fun and it's stupid and it's watchable.
It's fun, and there's definitely, like we've said this before, about like there's definitely passion went into the first one. This, especially with this producer John Flock, like it seems like it is just been a business decision of like that first one did well. You know, we can make these movies fairly cheaply. I'm assuming they're fairly cheap because it looks cheap.
It looks like it costs nothing.
You know, so,
and then all of the catering was soup, so it's probably really cheap.
Yeah, exactly. They saved a lot of money on the catering. But, you know, it does have its moments, though, where it's kind of funny. Like, the my favorite bit has to be the code that the Russians use to talk to each other when they're playing chess.
Yeah, it's like, it's just the words that they say while they're touching the queen.
But they make it out, like, I think, is it it's Christopher Lambert's friend who is actually, you know, undercover and trying to, like, sort out these guys. But he goes, oh, it's like, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's like a really complex way of communicating. It's almost impossible to decode or something like that. And then it just shows you them, like, you touch the queen when you want to say what you mean. And that's it. And then when when Christopher Lambert plays against them, he's like, I need to practice some moves. I hope this doesn't spaceship my, you know.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. Yeah. It's completely unsubtle.
Yeah, and I can't remember what he actually says, but it's like,
yeah, it's garbled nonsense when he's saying it, so that anyone who was listening in would be like, he's definitely talking in code.
But there's wee moments like that just kind of make it so bad it's good, kind of watchability. Like, you know, it has that kind of, I can sit and have a bit of a laugh with this movie, where I couldn't have with Lockout. There was something just that just seemed that wee bit impenetrable, or it just didn't seem lighthearted enough or something.
Yeah, the Fortress 2 was always on the edge for me for being the so bad it's good thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like for me, it never quite reached the tipping point.
Yeah.
It was always just sort of dull. And also, like, really, like, unnecessarily just exploitative as well. There's just a lot of scenes of people in showers.
Yeah, that's weird. And then, like, the people watching them being like,
yeah,
being creeps.
The guards just being super creeps.
Yeah.
All of the guards are terrible, except one guy who's just altruistically wonderfully good.
Yeah.
Who's a guy who actually I know better is playing villains, really. So it was hard for me to get over that. And I saw his face. He's done a lot of TV work. I think he was like the yellow-eyed demon in Supernatural.
That's right, yeah.
So he was like the main antagonist for like the first 3 years of that show.
I actually weirdly recognize him more for... He was in Fire. He was in one episode of Firefly.
He was, wasn't he?
And it was kind of a similar role to this one, where like he was like a kind of good guy working for the kind of questionable authorities.
He's working for the bad guys and questioning his orders. Yeah, that kind of thing. Yeah. Which he does a lot in this. But like, I feel like that also kind of came to nothing.
Yeah.
Like, he helped them out in a few fights. He helps him out in a fight, and then he helps him out later in a fight, and a guy ends up in a big oven and blows up, and it's real stupid. And like, it's just, there was never any sort of crescendo to that subplot. I feel like it just didn't really
There was a whole itself. There's a whole like video game ending to it, where like the spaceship is literally blowing up around them, and yet the bad guys are still focused just on killing Christopher Lambert. It's like, it doesn't matter. The spaceship's exploding, and there's nothing at this point. They can't even stop it. It's like, no, we have to kill him. It's like,
really? And there's a point where they're like, he's telling a guy to like, you have to seal off this section, and the guy can't do it. And he just walks up and turns a wee valve, and like, there, it's done. Like, what? That was you came up with all this drama and stuff, and then you didn't pay it off. You just went, nope, done.
Yep.
I was like, right, okay. That's this whole film actually for me is that. It's like they're trying to set up all this interesting stuff, and none of it pays off at all.
Yeah.
And then it just sort of ends.
Oh yeah, I just,
the end of it's terrible.
He just appears. Although
he just appears in full hiking gear on Earth, and I was like, wait, what happened?
I did enjoy like every time they showed his wife and kid running. Like, they must have been running in that field for about for a month solid.
Like, because it was supposed to be like, this is happening right now, but they never get out of the one field.
No. No. They're just running in circles around that field. Not a bit of wonder they needed him.
Indeed. So, Fortress 2, not as good as Fortress 1.
No, just watch Fortress 1.
Just watch Fortress 1. Okay, well, the screws are getting ornery now, and they may be calling a close to visiting ours, so we need a plan, and we need it quick, because I don't want to live in a space prison. So, John, even though that's a very pressing thing, I just can't move on without knowing. Which of these ones did you think was the best movie?
I don't know. The three of them really didn't grab me. I suppose, High Life does have... It's the better looking one, and it is...
Yeah.
You know, there's enough to grasp onto that it does elevate it above... It's weird to say that. Elevated above Lockout and Fortress 2. But yeah, I mean, the cinematography's great. As you said earlier, if maybe you trimmed 20 minutes or so off, it would probably be a better movie to me. To get rid of the superfluous scenes and those scenes that kind of don't make much sense. But yeah, I suppose that's it, really. I mean... The other two, what can you really say about them? They're kind of bad decisions. They're bad movies.
They are better
movies. You know?
Yeah, they are. They're both crappy rip-offs of significantly better films.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, for me, there's no competition. I think High Life is easily the best of these films. I would say overall, I think I really liked High Life as a whole. Again, there's some problems with it here and there.
I don't think I would watch it again, is my only thing. I did enjoy it. Like, I've probably been very negative about it, but that's just me. but, you know, I did enjoy it for the most part. It was just some of the stuff that we talked about earlier, like, you know, some of that, and just the fact that it seemed to be... It was trying too hard to be this kind of auteur piece rather than just like explore these issues in a kind of realistic way or in an interesting way. But you know, at the end of the day, yeah, it's not terrible. Like, it's just not something I can see myself putting on in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think it's really good. I think I think it's very technically well made.
Yeah.
Very much so. I did quite like, I mean, I thought it was pretty well written as well, as far as like the dialogue and stuff went, was grand. Performances, I think, were pretty good across the board.
Yeah.
I think Robert Pattinson was brilliant in this. Julia Binoche was brilliant in this.
Yeah. I mean, she's always great.
Yeah, she's very consistently great.
And actually, it seems so is Robert Pattinson ever since he stripped off the Twilight stigma.
Now that he's clawed his way from friggin', I was going to say J.K. Rowling there, that would have been incorrect.
Well, he was in those as well, wasn't he?
He was Cedric Diggory, character. I know, I remember that, because I didn't see the ones he was in until after I had seen him in something I liked.
Yeah.
And then I saw that one, it was the school sports day one. Yeah, it was the school sports day Harry Potter one, that people get annoyed when I call it the school sports day one. That's exactly what it is. Harry Potter and school sports day. So he's in that one.
Fortress of Solitude?
Yes, sure.
Harry Potter and the Fortress of Solitude.
Harry Potter hangs out with Superman at the North Pole. Yeah, so I remember in that one going, here, there's him. And then I just remembered that was his character's name because people said it like five times.
Yeah.
And then they dispose of him. Spoilers for Harry Potter. but he's a great actor.
Yeah. It seemed that Twilight and all that was a business decision, and fair play to him because it worked out well. I don't think anyone has anything. Him and... what do you call her?
Kristen Stewart.
Yes. They both kind of... take the piss out of those movies, which, how can you not? But
I mean, as speaking as we have both seen all of those films as well, which is insane.
Yeah.
Talk about like going out of your way to watch bad movies.
I watched it with Riff Tracks. It was enjoyable because of that very fact. But
yeah, in fact, it was one of the best movie watching experiences I think I ever had because I watched it with the Riff Tracks on it.
Yeah.
It was wonderful because it's a movie that almost seems specially designed to give the Riff Tracks guys stuff to work with
and
long long sort of stretches of silence for them to fill.
Yeah.
Because, like, most of those Twilight movies are just empty space. But he has been brilliant in so many films since.
Yeah.
To the point where, I mean, like The Lighthouse was one of my favorite films of, like, the last 10 years.
Yeah.
I think it's absolutely brilliant. He's in a great one called, as it's Cosmopolis. I keep messing up the name. I think it's Cosmopolis.
Is that the David Cronenberg one?
Yeah. Yeah, he was really good in that.
I need to actually see that.
He was really good in that. So, like, I mean,
Juliette Binoche's in that as well, isn't she?
Yes, she is. Yeah, she was in that too. So, like, he's a really good. He's kind of pulled the Leonardo DiCaprio, where yeah. he's been this, like, teen heartthrob for a wee while, and now he's like, I'm going to go be an actor. I'm going to do a bunch of indie movies and work with really interesting directors that are outside the mainstream, which is exactly what this is.
Yeah.
You know, this film is very much an outside. She's a very much an outsider director. In the same way that, like, Robert Eggers, who made The Lighthouse, and The Witch, which is also one of my favorite films of the last 10 years.
I would say, you know, he's been very clever with it because he went and he did the Twilight shit. He got a massive fan base.
Yeah.
And then he got a bit of weight behind him so that studios want him. He will put arses in seats. And then, as you say, he looked for Claire Denis because he seen her movie, I can't remember the name of it now. Anyway, he seen one of her movies, and White Material, that's it. And he loved it so much that he kind of tracked her down. He wanted to work with her, and he wasn't her first pick for this either. You know, they even looked at Daniel Craig and stuff, but she. Oh, wow. I should say he didn't really fit the role she had in mind, and once they met, and he read up on string theory and things like this because he wanted to kind of impress her and go, I'm really serious about this role, and he got it, and he is the best thing in this movie.
Yeah, he is. He's great in this film. Like, Juliette Binoche is brilliant as well, and Andre 3000 is of course great too. But he's the focal point, and it does revolve around him.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the first character we meet, and it's always going back to him caring for this baby and then going back into the past and jumping around, but it's always following him, and he carries it so well.
Yeah.
And he is just, he's got charisma, you know? He has a quiet charisma that, if you watch the Twilight movie, you can't see. You can't see anyone. It's almost like those movies
On Dramamol or something. He was just like stoned out of his head or something when he was doing Twilight.
I think everybody, they must have put something in the goddamn catering to just zonk everybody out for those films. Because everybody looks tired and bored and distracted.
Or
for the entirety of those films.
I know what happened. They were given the script.
They'd already signed up for it, and they were like, oh no.
How many millions is...
But this is this is very quickly becoming a Twilight review, and I don't want to do that.
No.
Except to say that Twilight is very, 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 very bad.
Yeah.
But if you watch it with the riff tracks, it's very, 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 very good.
I think we should. I also want to know, after watching these three movies, and you know, you were taken with High Life a lot more than I was. I don't hate it. I'm just a very negative person because I'm just kind of always have to like tear it apart.
Not usually, I don't think, but maybe just this week, you know.
But I do have to wonder how are we not like overrun with space prison movies? No, how is there not more good space prison movies?
Yeah, we find it like a little like sort of, you know, look behind the curtain here, but actually find it really difficult to find space prison movies. I mean, it's kind of how we ended up landed with Lockout, because I would have liked to avoid doing Lockout if I could. Fortress 2 I had a curiosity about because I hadn't seen it before.
Yeah.
And I'd seen Fortress, and I knew I liked Fortress, so we probably would have ended up with that. And High Life is a film that I have been waiting. I just never got around to it from when it came out, and I really wanted to see it. But like, we probably would if we could find something else. But it just seems like
there,
it's
there
not...
was one. There was one more, but I don't think it would have been much better. It was the stunt guy Scott Atkins, is it?
Yeah.
There was a space one that we had it down in the list at one point, but I don't think it's meant to be that great either. I forget the name of it. But yeah, that was the only four that we really had.
Yeah, it was hard to find space prison films, and it's such a cool concept. They have featured in other films, but in like a minor way, like Guardians of the Galaxy, they end up in a space prison,
but it's
like a small part of the film. It's like, it's maybe like 10 or 12 minutes.
Yeah.
And it's basically just an excuse for an action escape scene.
It's basically, well, for the story, it's how they all kind of meet and go, oh, we work well together. And they utilize it well, but...
Yeah, it doesn't qualify it as a space prison movie, unfortunately, because it's such a short time of the film.
There you go, Hollywood. Make more space prison movies. We'll watch it because we're fucking idiots.
We'll watch it because we're desperate. But that being the case then, John, which of these movies do you think gives us the best advice of how to get me the hell out of space prison, please?
Yeah, well...
Like, because in Lockout, he just sort of jumps out the side. It's kind of like, it's that joke, again, I hate to bring up Bill and Ted again, but... Well, I don't hate to bring it up. I love to bring it up. But there's that joke in Bill and Ted where they're like, they're in the phone booth and it's going really fast and it's falling down. And Bill and Ted are standing in the open doorway of the phone booth.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh no. And I think it's Ted says, when we're a foot from the ground, jump. Yeah. That's basically how they get out of the space prison in Lockout.
Yeah.
Because as far as Lockout's concerned, the atmosphere is about 20 feet deep from top to bottom. Because like from the time he jumps out of the space prison to the time he hits the ground, it's probably about 12 seconds at the most. It doesn't burn up in the atmosphere, you know.
Yeah, none of that. That's crazy.
They don't really have any of that. They address it for a second. It seems like it gets a wee bit hot and then they're fine. And then they just grand, and then he just opens a glider, which is also a thing that is used in Escape from New York. And then they just land on a motorway, and then they're grand. In Fortress 2, how do they escape in Fortress 2?
They kind of steal a ship, because that's the whole, talking to the Russians.
So there's a fake out with the ship that gets blown up with space laser or something, and then...
They escape with that, and then I forget where they get the ship.
Is
it Pam Grier's ship? Maybe
I think it's Pam Grier's ship. I don't know.
Yeah, but anyway, High Life doesn't count because they don't actually escape. They possibly die. Well, it's not really.
It's left a bit open-ended. I actually like the way it ends because it doesn't really matter, and they just have a nice little moment.
Yeah.
I think the fact that they go towards having just a nice moment at the end of the film is, for me, like, you don't need some kind of great dramatic conclusion.
Yeah.
They just have this wee sort of, they share a moment, and that's enough. Yeah. And then whatever happens next, you can fill in. It's another one of the things I like about this movie. I'm coming around on this. I like this movie on its own, but the more I talk about it, the more I'm like, I did really like this movie a lot. I think it might stick with me. I don't know if I'll watch it again, but there's a bunch of films I love that I'll never watch again.
Yeah,
you know, like, I'll never watch The Deer Hunter again, but it's wonderful.
I've already watched that way too many times.
Yeah.
I think I've only watched it three times.
I saw it once, and I remember when I picked it up, being like, this tape's really... It was on VHS.
Yeah.
I remember picking it up going, this tape's really heavy. This tape's heavier than tapes usually are, because it was so long.
Oh, yeah. Also, conceptually, it's very heavy.
It's a really heavy subject matter, and there's a lot of long takes in it that make it feel really long. And let's not review The Deer Hunter here, but it is a very good film, and if you haven't seen it, you should watch it.
You should. Same with Dancer in the Dark. But anyway, let's not get into heavy, depressing movies that are great and should all be watched. Let's talk about which of these terrible movies will help us escape.
Escape the space prison.
I mean, the Lockout one, I don't think it'll work.
I don't trust it.
I think stealing a ship is...
Stealing a ship Right, no, so wait, did you come, you came here on a ship,
came
right?
Here in the Amazon. And as you said earlier, the security here is kind of bad. And what if
I just got my phone, right? And I just ordered us from Amazon?
Yeah.
Which is, in fact, yes, I've got the Amazon app in my phone here. So I'm just going to call up a little shuttle, and then the delivery guy will come in and be like, he's here to pick up a package, and we'll get in this, like, during my arts and crafts session, yeah. When I made my little duck, I also made a fun box. So if I just make a little shipping label here now, hold on. Right, okay, we'll both climb inside this. Well, you don't need to climb inside this box.
I'll do it anyway.
Do you want to get in the box?
Why
not? Okay.
Well, how many times do you get to fly in space in a cardboard box?
Probably just this once. So let's pile in here, right? Okay, and I'm just going to order up to my house. I'm going to order, what will we say this is? Well, I've made all these papier-mâché ducks, so we'll put them above, and we'll say this is a package of papier-mâché ducks, and I'll order them for my house.
Sounds good.
And then the Amazon.com guy will come and pick us up.
Yay!
Yay! Cool. All right. Well, that's about all we have time for before we... Because I did pick express delivery, so he's definitely on his way. So we are on Twitter. We are at 7dayapocalypse. That is at @7dayapocalypse. You can email us questions, queries, whinging, being nice, that'd be cool too,
yeah.
At filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. That's filmcast@thisweeksapocalypse.com. We are also now uploading full episodes and soon possibly truncated episodes to YouTube. Ooh. So you can go and join our channel there. This Week's Apocalypse, of course, is what we are on there. And I guess let's just sit here and wait.
Yeah.
I paid £3 extra, so we should be here any minute. So, oh, we're jostling. Okay.
Bye.
Right. Well.
Bye. Bye.